Radiotopia.
I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
February 14th, 1998.
Sixth grade.
Dear diary.
Dear Jesus.
Dear sweet asswad.
Adults sharing the embarrassing things
they created as kids.
So I wrote poems about masturbation.
Before an audience
of total strangers.
I feel like an idiot.
I'm the only normal one in my entire family.
Mom, you can't read this.
These are the stories hidden inside
the pages of our past.
Welcome to the Mortified Podcast. I'm Neil, and you're listening to a special Halloween edition of the show featuring the Monsters of Mortified. Today on the show, we're scaring up three tales of kids who become obsessed with things that go bump in the night, from demons to vampires. Boo. And now, track one of our Monsters of Mortified mixtape, Demons. Scott Kravitz joins us on stage at Lincoln Hall in Chicago, where he shared a school assignment about a book that haunted everyone but him.
Hi, I'm Scott. When I was five, I became obsessed with my own mortality. And the teacher asked us to do a book report on any book of our choosing, and this is what I turned in. For my book report, I read The Exorcist by William Peter Blatty. Now, obviously, this book was a little bit above my reading comprehension level, but I had seen some scenes from the movie, so I felt confident enough to write this. This book was very excellent and interesting, too. It is about the devil who goes into a girl, and so that is why she says bad things to her mom, and when her mom has company over to the house. I would recommend this book because it is fun to read. Many people think this is a scary book, but it really is not, because not that many people get killed. And you never see it when it happens, because it is a book. The end.
That was Scott, recorded in Chicago at Lincoln Hall. And now, track two of our Monsters of Mortified mixtape, Ghosts. As we were making this episode, we got a call from a friend, Matt McKenna, who just received a piece of childhood writing from his parents. And when he told us about it, we just knew we had to include it.
I was obsessed with Ghostbusters. I mean, I saw it when I was 4 years old when it came out. And I still remember just like it being this biblical vision when I was like a little kid in this movie theater. I knew every line. I even dressed up for Halloween as a Ghostbuster.
But then Matt's favorite movie was spun off into a Saturday morning cartoon.
I went with it. I honestly was so jarred by the reboot of Slimer and the Real Ghostbusters, and I hated that they put this comic relief character in the front. And even as a 9-year-old, I was like, this is so pandering. I was like, the real Ghostbusters are the stars. It's not the goddamn ghosts.
And Matt couldn't stop talking about his childhood heroes having been turned into fodder for younger audiences.
My mom was just tired of me and my like 9-year-old self just monologuing about this. My mom was just like, oh, I know how you feel, but I think you should just write it down. I imagine that the president of ABC would be reading this letter. I remember writing the letter thinking, if I really nail this, they are going to take this to heart and they're really going to know that this isn't working.
Dear ABC, the Slimer and the Real Ghostbusters is bad. All caps. And I don't like how the show is so imaginary. For instance, if they fall off a cliff, they still live. And I know it was imaginary before. Also, how poorly the drawing is. Slimer doesn't look like Slimer. The real Ghostbusters don't look like the real Ghostbusters. And when I say don't look like, I mean 2 years ago. Also, I don't like how the real Ghostbusters appear in the show so seldom. So practically, I don't like anything about it. Now, I'm one of the most real Ghostbusters fans. I have pins, toys, posters. I even have a Ghostbusters 2 poster on hold. Oh, and yeah, give my regards to Kirk Cameron. One of your ex-watchers, Matt Timothy McKenna, age 9, January 8th, 1989, 10:12 p.m. P.S. Whose idea was it to make Janine a Ghostbuster? Thank you.
Sadly for Matt, the network did not end up taking any of his notes. Despite his feedback, the Real Ghostbusters animated series ended up running for nearly 200 episodes. But in a fun twist, Matt did grow up to write on an animated TV series.
The DNA of Ghostbusters was injected into my brain, and it still, to this day, is just sort of like sprawling and branching off to like pretty much everything I do because of like Ghostbusters. I grew up truly believing in the supernatural, and then I ended up writing for the better part of a decade for American Dad, show that was basically about an alien living with a family.
Finally, we had to ask, will Matt be attending the much-anticipated all-female reboot of his favorite movie? Despite some pretty strong opinions back in the day about Janine ghostbusting.
That was my 9-year-old self, but I have grown in the interim. I can't wait. I am on pins and needles. I've been looking at all the press for it. I'm like looking at all the photos that are being released. Yeah, so a person can change. That's all I'm saying. An army of Janines as Ghostbusters I would watch. Yes.
And now, track 3 of our Monsters of Mortified mixtape, Vampires. As a preteen growing up in the early 90s, Sarah was sick of being overlooked by guys and dreamed of one day transforming into something more desirable.
Definitely a sexy teenage vampire would have been the absolute best time to get bitten and locked into an immortal lifestyle, in my opinion. You know, I always looked like way younger than I was. So at 12, I probably looked like I was 9. I was super dorky. I had so little control over all of those physical aspects of my life. I wanted to fast forward to being alluring and mysterious.
Unfortunately for Sarah, she was already in the midst of a transformation she found far less magical.
These things that people were telling me about becoming a woman, like starting my period, that's not what I wanted womanhood to be at all. I wanted it to be, you know, silken and smoldering in the corner and catching people's eyes and, you know, not being terrified about how to reconcile stirrup pants with like giant maxi pads.
Then, one day,
I discovered the vampire Lestat, which was sitting on the back of the toilet. My mom left it there and immediately was just obsessed.
Ironically, her one big concern with becoming a woman was the same issue she would have faced as a vampire.
I've always been super squeamish around blood.
Here's Sarah chronicling her awkward transformation into a vampire, or woman, or something, recorded at the Someday Lounge in Portland in 2007.
Today, I must write to you about the beautiful boy on my bus. Through my research, I have found his name to be Brian. He's probably in the 5th grade, and he plays a band instrument. Brian has a slim build and a beautiful, definite face, like what I would call a youth. I love his brown hair, somewhat long in the back with little mallard tail curls. He has almost pale skin, and he moves like a falcon. A wary falcon. No, Brian is like a mother deer. Dear future, I have begun yet another book today, The Vampire Lestat. Absolutely magnificent. I am inhaling. We went to see Edward Scissorhands, and I do not believe Natalie got it like I did. It reminds me of my vampires in a way. That is probably why I cried. It offends me so to hear of vampires treated the way they are. When someone makes a stupid vampire joke or a horrible vampire series commercial, they seem to be more mystical beings than mindless beasts. Thank you, Anne Rice. Lately, I've been working with a fantasy that I am a vampress. Mid-20s body, Sarah. P.S. We're at war. I do not know how to put this, but today I began menstruation. This utterly disturbs me. Though I did not tell Natalie, I gave Mom permission to tell Dad and Pam. Furthermore, the thought of school terrifies me. Just here at home, as difficult as it is. Sigh. I do believe I shall become accustomed to this awful inconvenience. Sarah Hoops. As I thought, today was indeed difficult, though I doubt anyone considers that I might be having my period. They might have found it suspicious that I carried my purse around with me everywhere. It will be hard, but I shall survive tomorrow. I have devised a new visualization. I'm a ravishing vampire who has separated from the others, for I am black, with flowing raven hair. I'm a lone soul that hunts alone. This boy called Brian from my bus continues to plague me. He possesses an angelic beauty, one found in both genders. And in a strange way, I long to meet him. He truly intrigues me. Brian smiled at me today when I was sad because I couldn't find a seat on the bus. Brian possesses the grace of a Doberman. It is very strange, but I'm really beginning to notice boys more, really. I suppose this is normal, but it is a little embarrassing. Oh well, was bound to happen eventually. My dumb period is gonna start up again tomorrow. I am not remotely amused. Oh, I wish I could prove to all those popular kids how beautiful and great I could be. Yours, Sarah. Yes, your faithful Sarah has returned with more news about my chaotic, erotic, and frantic life. Once again, I feel silly. Once again, I feel silly for my unusual feelings towards Brian. I saw another youth today. Only blonde, very beautiful young fellow. Sarah, stop this. You are a wretched girl. I'm rather mad at Anne Rice. She has completely trapped me. I am but another, if lesser, of the many who love her writing. I despise to be just one of the many. All I desire is to be Sarah. Yours, Sarah. P.S. The war has supposedly ended. It is late again, 10:41, and my period is in full swing. I am not so worried about it anymore. It's life. I'm almost a little excited. So Natalie and I had a monstrous walk today. We talked about my recent dream, about me being a prostitute, etc. Yours, Sarah. Saw Brian, my beautiful youth, on the bus today. I believe he is hanging around with the wrong crowd. Beware, my youth. So, okay, adult Sarah now. So it was around this time that Brian, the wary hawk, started getting that kid mustache, and he stopped being good vampire material.
When I went off to summer camp and some magic happened, I went to the University of Oregon to a nerd camp. I was around my kind. I felt inspired to just let myself be myself. And, you know, I wasn't fighting the battles that I had to fight in school of people thinking that vampires were just cheesy Halloween things. And they had this fantastic dance at the end of camp. And that definitely was the closest that I ever came to being a vampire, and certainly the most womanly that I had become up to that point.
Friday night was incredible. Due to my dance transformation, I wore blood red lipstick and nail polish. Everyone said I was completely seductive. And Jessica said I looked vampirish. Speaking of vampires, I've been having awful nosebleeds lately and severe allergies. Yours, Sarah.
That was Sarah, sharing her real-life vampire diaries on stage at Portland at Someday Lounge. Now, before we wrap up this week's episode, and y'all rush off to hand out candy to the little monsters knocking at your door, we wanted to leave you all with this final entry that reminds us that even though many of us have grown up, it doesn't mean we have to stop believing in the magic of Halloween or its monsters, at least for one night.
Dear Diary, today is Halloween and it just about sucks. The schools have fucked it up for everyone because of school tomorrow. They just make us think that we have to grow up and nothing's fun. When I grow up, I'm going to live in a big house and take Halloween day off work and make caramel apples and popcorn and give them out and have a haunted house and stuff real neat. I'm gonna keep Halloween alive. I've gotta do it for the future.
That was Ruby. And earlier you heard Sarah, Scott, and Matt reading their childhood writings with no embellishing, no exaggerating, just God-given awkwardness. Share the shame, tell your friends about the podcast by tweeting about it or rating it on iTunes. It all really helps. You can also visit GetMortified.com to learn about upcoming Mortified stage shows. And big news, if you live in Dallas, Minneapolis, Detroit, Dublin, Paris, and London, we're looking for participants to appear in new shows in those cities. Visit GetMortified.com to get on stage. As many of you know, the Mortified podcast is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, which is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation and MailChimp to celebrate creativity, chaos, and teamwork. And if you're interested in supporting our podcast, please email sponsor at radiotopia.fm. Our podcast production team for this episode includes Kathy Tu, Pierce Priscelli, Dave Nadelberg, and myself, Neil Katcher, Scott Lifton, Ann Jensen Smith, Egan Danahy, Megan Holmes, Frank Matthews, and Susan Danahy story produced these performances for the stage. Music by Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, and Snake Snake Snakes. Additional thanks to Carrie Frola, the Lance Roberts Studios, Someday Lounge, Lincoln Hall, King King, and all the dedicated Mortified live producers whose work make the stage show possible. Until next time, we remind you that we are freaks, we are fragile, and we all survived.